Blog Talk Radio.
Special hat tip to Mr. Adam Siegel, who has provided us with our opening jingle. This is Rich Farrago, known as CT Mets Fan on Twitter, and you are listening to the Metsian Podcast. And this is a happy edition, a very happy edition. Last time we were on the air, let's face it, you know, baseball wasn't a thing. We were talking about collective bargaining agreements and competitive balance taxes, and now we have some baseball to talk about, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the intro because we have a lot to talk about, and so I'm going to go right to bringing on my co-conspirators in podcasting crime, and let's start with, let's go down to the borough of Brooklyn, and we'll bring in Mr. Mike LeColin. So, Mike, how are you tonight?
Hello, Rich. I'm doing well. Hello, baseball fans, and hello, Met fans.
Welcome this evening, Mike. And now, you know, we give this man a new name. Well, not a new name. We recycle them, but we give him a name, a moniker, every podcast. So tonight we'll go with the grand poobah of podcasting operations, Mr. Sam Maxwell. And, Sam, it's always fun to ask you where we find you tonight and then how you're doing. So two questions for you. Where are you and how are you?
I'm in Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan, Rich. Thank you very much. Great to be on here, actually talking baseball. And what's really funny that you gave me that nickname is that I was just listening to Grand Poobah, a rapper from the 90s. Well, he could very well still be a rapper. I don't know enough about him. But in his one of the songs I was listening to, he calls himself Grand Poobah Maxwell. So I gotta go down the rabbit hole and see if he's a cousin, possibly.
Has to be. There has to be some connection there. So, all right, gentlemen, lots to talk about. And as I said in the opener, it's a very happy edition because last time we were on the air was about a week ago, and there was no baseball. There was a lockout, and we didn't know when it would end. So let's start there. So, Mike, I'm going to go to you first. The lockout ended on Thursday, and so my question for you is did you think we would have a full baseball season, or did you start to get to the point where you're like, oh, my God, it might be May, it might be June, it might be never? How did the ending of the lockout land on you?
You know, based on their history and negotiations, I did think that the 2022 season would be compromised. To what degree? That was the million-dollar question. But I definitely saw April and even parts of May in jeopardy. I'm surprised that they reached an agreement. They compromised, so I'm proud of them. I'm glad they got this done. I think we have a five-year deal. But if you read the fine print, I think this fight is just being put on hold until the next go-around. But I'm surprised, and I'm happy. You know, I'm in retirement now, and I get to enjoy my first summer in retirement with baseball. So good job by then.
Tremendous. You know, and Mike, you hit on something right there, very important. I think you're right, by the way. I think in 5 years, it's going to happen again. Because if you listen to Bruce Meyer, the day after they signed it, Bruce Meyer is the lead negotiator for the MLBPA. He said, well, he basically was like, yeah, you know, agreement. He's basically saying there are a lot of things we have to fix. We have to address earlier arbitration, earlier free agency. He just went down the list of everything that's still wrong. And it's like, dude, it's been 24 hours. Can we at least call a truce for a year of the five-year agreement? So anyway, details to follow on that. But I'm glad you touched on that because that struck me really hard. It was like, damn. So, Sam, how did the players voted for it about 3 in the afternoon on Thursday. So how did it land on you?
All of the venom that we had towards whichever party you were more so leaning towards, kind of just went away. And then, you know, I think the thing is that the fact that baseball's back kind of trumps the fact that there's some things that were just I just don't like about what was agreed upon. And, of course, you know, we're going to get into the weeds of it, but especially the whole advertising, that is the part that's just, you know, in terms of on the uniforms and the helmet, I've just been hoping and praying that the ball wouldn't go down that road. And I, you know, I am such a purist that I was pissed off when they started putting the new era symbol on the hats, because I thought they looked extremely minor leaguish. And nothing against that, but it was supposed to stay in the minor leagues that way. But branding. Anyway, I'm obviously getting lost here in the specifics when we're talking about the overall. I was just thrilled, and it for one thing. I mean, good on them for figuring out how to get 162 games out of it. You know, I hope that that doesn't. I hope that we're not talking about that too much when it comes to the fact that they had to fill in some of the natural off days that are built within 162 game schedule over the course of 6 months. But at this point, we only lost 2 weeks. Hopefully there's some doubleheader. Maybe this will also just allow, I haven't looked at the schedule, but maybe this will allow for scheduled doubleheaders like there used to be. Because for too long there have just been doubleheaders because of necessity, and it was, you know, maybe that was something that was collectively bargained. I'll say this last, that, you know, in terms of talking about the gentleman that you were speaking of on the Players Association side already going into stuff he didn't like that he agreed upon, you know, if it's we have a 5-year window. How about you don't wait till the last 2 weeks of a lockout and actually maybe start some of the groundwork and stop punting it, borrow a phrase from another sport. That's what I hope for. You have 5 years to maybe, like everybody, especially because this is apparently the warm-up, you now know what is very important. Now, obviously, in 5 years, all other stuff could come up. There, you know, you have to react accordingly to the environment around you. But, you know, this stuff is there right now. If this is what you want to fix by the time the 5 years come around, just have it ready and don't waste an entire offseason not negotiating.
What an idea, huh? Totally agree, Sam. And, you know, I did a lot of writing on this. I was pretty much exclusive on MMO, Mesmerize Online, writing about the lockout, which I'm not sure that's a good thing. But anyway, and I was with Howie Rose. I never felt they would miss a game, and I was convinced of it because the bottom line is this, right? In 1994, we all know what happened, canceled season, canceled World Series. Baseball was a $3 billion industry-ish in 1994. Now baseball is a $10 billion industry. That's 7 billion reasons why, as much as these people don't like each other, and it's clear they don't, Rob Manfred came out and said he doesn't have a good relationship with Tony Clark. There were reports that Bruce Meyer from the MLBPA and Dan Halem from MLB were actually yelling at each other like teenagers in the negotiating room. It's clear they don't like each other, totally clear, but they need each other. They need each other to bask in these $10 billion. And to that point, what I'd like to do, gentlemen, is I would like to talk about some of the things that came out of the CBA. I'm going to throw them out and just go bing, bing. You know, you guys just comment on them any way you can. I'm no particular order. And then when we get through all that, we'll get to the stuff the Mets have done. Does that sound like a plan?
Yep.
All right. Yep. Mike, we'll start with you. And again, I have no particular order here. I'm just going to throw them out. Starting next year, Mike, there will be an unbalanced schedule. Every team will play every team every year. So while I don't know the specifics of that, I was doing the math in my head, and it basically works out to you would play your divisional opponents roughly 12 to 14 times each. You'd play the teams in the other division of your league 6 times each, and then you'd play the teams in the other league 3 times each, roughly. That comes out really close on the math. So, Mike, you and I go all the way back to the 70s. Now you're going to have every team next year playing every other team, fewer games in division as opposed to 19 games against the Braves, Phillies, Nationals, and Marlins, more like 12, 13, 14, something in there. Mike, what are your thoughts?
I can't stand interleague. That being said, I think this is a fair system. It's a more fair system. At least a majority of games against their own division, that's good. And the fact that they're playing all teams and, you know, it's not cyclical where we play the Twins this year and we don't see them again for another 3 years. I'm glad that's been eliminated. So it's a more fair playing field. You know, the Mets are going to play the A's. So are the Phillies. So are the Marlins. So are the Braves. So it kind of evens out the playing field. I'm okay with that. You know, I'm against interleague. I wish they would go in the opposite direction. That being said, again, I'm repeating myself, this is much more fair than what's been in place throughout these years.
Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like it. And, you know, I'm basically going to echo what Mike just said. And the novelty wore off really quickly. You know, I think that maybe the rivalry series should have just stuck instead of this rotation that it ended up being. But if you're going to do it, then it's nice to think, like, not that I looked at the other leagues, like basketball especially, because it seems like this is really more than the NBA. You're taking a little bit from basketball here. Again, at least to echo what Mike said, we're going to be seeing the entire group. And, you know, like if you want to, like, bring up, like, football, you might potentially get a preview, more so than you got a chance to in other years, similar to the way Super Bowl 42 played out when the Giants kind of had a warm-up against the Patriots, even though the Patriots ended up beating them that time. You know, that you get a warm-up to what a World Series matchup could look like. So I'm in lockstep basically with what Mike just said.
Yeah, you know what? As much of a traditionalist as I am, I'm in lockstep too, because clearly the universal DH made this possible, because it was very difficult to play by different rules, and you played this team, that team. You know, now you could do this. You could have more interleague games because everybody's playing by the same set of rules. And you know what? It's time. It's time, because I'd like to see Mike Trout. Now, granted, it's 3 games a year, but, you know, for fans, they could see every player on every team, and I think that's good. The NBA does it this way, NHL, NFL, they don't play every team in the NFL, but they play different divisions every year, so it's time. It's time to start blending the game, showing fans the different players. I think if your grounding is you want to have more exposure to the game, that's the way to do it. You have to let the kids and everybody see these players on other teams. I think it's a very, very good idea. I don't need to see the Braves 19 times a year. I don't need to see the Marlins 19 times a year. 12's good by me, bro. I mean, I'm good with that. I don't need to see these teams that much. I think it's good. Keith's going to hate it, I guarantee it, when they start talking about it, but I think it's good. All right, next rule change, then, in no particular order. No, he's going to hate every minute of it. So next rule change, okay. We'll go to pitch clock. Pitch clock will likely be in place in 23. 14 seconds to throw the ball, nobody on base. 19 seconds when there is somebody on base. Mike, what do you think?
I mean, we have no choice, right? So they just make sure they better call this fairly. You know, if they're going to implement the clock, implement the clock. Not when you want to. You know, every day except Tuesday. You know how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's outcry. And then they overreact. And then it dies down. And then they don't pay attention to the clock. And then something happens. And there's overreaction. Have consistency. That's all I ask, Rich. Have consistency.
Bingo. Sam, Pitch clock.
Well, I guess I'll ask this first. Has there been anything regarding what the penalty will be for going over 15 seconds? I mean,
I believe it's a ball.
That, once you say it again, I'm sorry. What?
I'm sorry. It's a ball.
Called a ball.
Okay. And yeah. So there you go. I think that, you know, we have joked about Daisuke Matsuzaka and Steve Traxel for a very long time, while reveling in folks like Jacob deGrom, who works extremely fast, but also R.A. Dickey, who is a fast worker as well. And I know, I think even Stroman, and I know it's not, you know, it's a faux pas to actually compliment him. He had a certain rhythm on the mound as well. You know, I think that it needed to be implemented within the ranks as opposed to having to force it. But, you know, the biggest issue, as we know, in terms of why games are so long, is not necessarily because of how slow the pitcher is working. It's because of the advertising. Bottom line, as far as I'm concerned, it all comes back to the advertising. What's the biggest difference between a two-hour game from 1938 and now? It's the fact that you have television time. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how it speeds up the game, but call me skeptical that it's going to do much for how outlandish these things have gotten.
And, you know, a friend of mine made a very, very good point about the pitch clock. You know, these guys have been pitching this way, whatever this way is, since they were 6, 7 years old. Look at the Grom. In between every pitch, he's shaking his arm, all that stuff. You're going to take these guys out of their rhythm. That's going to happen. You know, your guys might be 35, guys might be 28. They're going to be, if they truly enforce it, and you both made that point, and yes, that's true, you have to truly enforce it, these guys are going to be pitching in a way that they haven't pitched their whole lives. They're going to be not doing their little jiggling routine or shaking their elbow or whatever it is. I really have to hope that we don't see more injuries because of it. So that's my concern, is because you're taking these creatures of habit out of their rhythm, will we see more injuries and, of course, uniform implementation? So good points there. Sam, keep your vocal cords warm. We'll start with you here. Larger bases. This one, in addition to the pitch clock, it's being used in the minors this year. Larger bases, 3 inches bigger, inch and a half on each side. What do you think?
Oh, God. I mean, first of all, I've got to give a shout-out to some person who photoshopped Ricky Henderson holding like the most giant base you could possibly imagine, as a little bit of a, you know, making fun of this entire thing. I don't know whether it's going to force teams to implement, you know, stolen bases, which has not necessarily been as prevalent in the game in a long time. But I, you know, we shall see. We shall see how it, you know. There is bottom line that at some point, Jose Reyes is a perfect example, who had about 70 stolen bases a year at the beginning of his career. And yes, part of it was slowing down, but I think also a part of it was that it wasn't facilitated within the ranks anymore, as to why it kind of took a backseat within his game. So again, color me skeptical that it's going to increase people's strategies, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, that inch and a half, I look at it like this. When you see a lot of stolen base attempts, they're very, very close. That inch and a half may matter. And also, if the infielder can use more of the bag as protection from the oncoming runner, Chase Utley. So, Mike, what are your thoughts?
Oh, boy. Hold on. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. Sorry about that. This one makes me break out in a little bit of a rush. How long have people, historians, fans, admirers of the game, lauded the perfection of baseball, the dimensions, 60 feet 6 inches, 90 feet between the bases. In school, in geometry class, we learned that in geometry, there's a proof. You go through your motions, and you still have to provide a proof. The geometry of baseball is ruined if you implement this the wrong way. Now, if they move third base and let it bleed into foul territory a little bit, they're not exactly, or they don't necessarily have to ruin the perfection of 90 feet. It just depends on where they place it. You're still dealing with right angles. I just don't know where they're going to place the bags. I'm not aware of that. I haven't looked into it. Is the entire bag going to be in fair territory? Or is at first base some of that bag going to bleed into foul territory so the base runner can run? I don't
my
know.
These
are particulars.
No, I'm sorry. My understanding is that the 3 inches at first base will be in foul territory. The
All right, what about
second
third
and third base?
Base
will be bigger, yeah.
But is that going to bleed into foul territory as well? Because then you protect the integrity of 90 feet. And to me, it's about the geometry. Throughout our lives, throughout our television viewing lives, and ever since we had instant replay, before it was an official thing, and now that it is an official thing, a close play at first, second, third, home, has always, you know, been determined by a fraction of an inch. Am I right or wrong?
You're correct.
And I guess we just have to wait and see, you know, our preponderance of base runners are going to be called safe now because of that fraction of an inch that once upon a time, you know, in the human essence of the game, we let umpires make a judgment call, but that's no longer the case. But in either scenario, it was always a fraction of an inch. And I'll go back to the perfect geometry of baseball. In math class, you have to offer a proof. You can no longer offer a proof with these dimensions in baseball. And that's my issue.
Yeah, and Rich, to cut in right there real quick, the 90 feet, like nine has been such a part of like he was talking about, the mathematics of baseball. It's nine is just littered throughout there. And here I will also add, are they increasing the size of home plate? Because when you think about it, that's also technically a base to be stolen. So, you know, is there a little hypocrisy here just doing the bases?
Could be, and they're not obviously changing the plate, but the dimensions will be affected because even if you put all 3 inches, which I don't believe is the plan, of first base and third base in foul territory, well, you're changing the way the runner cuts the bag, but even not even getting that deep into it, second base will be 3 inches bigger. So it is not 90 feet between the two bases. It isn't. It just isn't. You know, it's an inch and a half short of that coming from first to second and from second to third. So we'll just have to – there will be a change, and that's the idea. The idea is to make the bases just a tiny bit closer to encourage more traffic on the base paths. I love stolen bases. I think it's – I don't like this. I'm not sure of any other way that they could try to bring more stolen bases, more on-the-base action to the game. Maybe, you know, somebody tries to take the extra base more, you get more outs at the bases or more plays at the bases. To me, that's always been more exciting than a home run anyway. But I think – you know, if you're cutting the dimension, you're messing with the record books too, because it's going to be a little bit easier to steal a base, and that will affect the Lou Brocks and the Ricky Hendersons of the world. All right, so interesting on that one. Those two rules are being tested throughout the minor league this year and will be implemented in the major league next year. The next one I'm about to talk about is not happening in AAA this year, only in the AA down. But the plan is to put it in the majors, and here's the big daddy of them all, Mike. I'm going to start with you. It's ruling out the shift. And the way the rule is written is that you will have to have, when the ball is pitched, two infielders on either side of second base. So you could back up into the grass, but you have to be on either side of second base. Mike, your thoughts on a rule that at least limits the shift?
Again, you know, that's human intervention. It's contrived. You know, my perfect scenario would be to get away from the ship, go the other way, you know, take what they give you, and that will regulate. That's my point. Baseball has always been self-regulating, you know, but with the advent of analytics, they don't let you stray. You go up to the plate, one thing in mind, you know, make connect, angle, that, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's in their best interest to shift because there's no variation. There's less creativity. It's more science. It's more numbers. And it looks more robotic. I'd rather have them hit the other way. I hate the shift, but I don't like these rules. It's contrived. I want the game to be self-regulating. Again, somehow, some way, we're going to have to reach a compromise. And I think, you know, I would let a fielder be right behind second base, whether it be at the shortstop shifting over to the right side or the second baseman shifting over to the left side, no farther than, you know, aligned with home, the mound, second base. No farther. That's the extent that I would take the rule. Hit the other way, please. But thank goodness they're only implementing that in the lower leagues. And, you know, we have time on our hands to figure that one out.
You know, Sam, I don't want to bias this when I go to you, but everybody I've spoken to, like without exception, says what Mike just said, myself included. What's your thought on the rule that would eliminate the shift? I don't like saying eliminate, because you could still back somebody way the hell up on the outfield grass, but you have to have two infielders on either side of second base. What do you think?
It's weird that I think about, you know, managing in a video game. But when I was playing baseball games back in the day, you'd have to decide where you were going to put the fielders. And obviously that's baseball. But it's funny to me that that's such an artificial version of it popped into my head when it comes to having to shift everybody around. I was listening to, I believe it's Daniel McCartan this weekend on WFAN, and I thought she brought up a great point, and I will have it piggyback my point in that I agree with everybody in terms of, like, too much is being contrived out of, you know, it's too much human interaction, too much. Anyway, I'm stumbling over my words, but that there's, it's, you know, it's gone too much the opposite way, where it's just overshift and overshift and overshift. And yes, it needs to be corrected. But what Danielle brought up this weekend was the fact that one of the reasons why they have been overshifting so much is because people are not taught how to hit the same way. That it used to be, when you go to the batting cage, that you used to practice hitting it up the middle constantly. Hit it up the middle, hit it up the middle, hit it up the middle. Now you can't even focus on hitting it up the middle because the third baseman's over there, and I'm quoting her. This is, you know, yes, it seems natural to say, hit it the other way, figure out how to hit it the other way. But it's just not how they're taught now. It's all about the launch angle. And I think that's the biggest issue, is the fact that you don't have the most well-rounded hitters, on a general basis. And that's why people have felt like, you know, if we need outs, let's get some outs. And that's where the shifting has come. So I'll also say this, like, we're talking about it experimenting in these leagues, but it seems like it's like the experiment is supposed to go good or bad. And there is no analysis of whether it was bad. So – it just seems like they're, when you say they're testing it out, It's just not necessarily a full-on analysis.
Well, as far as I know, the plan is to just iron the kinks out. Like, these things are happening in the major leagues in 2023. It's not about, you know, did it work or didn't it. I think this is a thing. It's a real thing. The owners want it, and one of the things in the CBA was the owners now have the ability to implement rule changes within 45 days. So they've already been very clear with the players that they want all three of these things. And I suppose if something turns out to be disastrous in the, you know, this year, they could say we're not going to do it. But the idea isn't so much does it work or not at this point. The idea is just get the kinks out toward implementation. But and I, you know, the game is changing. And there's one more thing, guys, I want to ask you before we move on to the Mets. And by the way, you're listening to the Metsian podcast. We're very happy that you are. We're about halfway through our hour. We're going to do one more change to the game kind of a question, and then we're going to talk about our beloved New York Mets. So, guys, another thing that I think was very central to why I thought, and I think some people thought, and why there wasn't any, there weren't any games that were canceled, is new revenue streams coming into the game. And there are two new revenue streams that one was announced just before the CBA was signed, and tell me that didn't motivate the owners, right? And the other one was announced just after. So what I'm talking about is there will be streaming every Friday on Apple TV Plus. And the way that will work is Apple TV Plus will select two games on a Friday that they will own. They're the only people who can broadcast it. The local team can't broadcast it. No one else can broadcast it. So Apple TV Plus, every Friday, they might say, oh, the Dodgers are playing the Mets at 7 at City. We want that one. And the Giants play the Padres at 10 in San Diego. We want that one. So if that's the case, you have to have Apple TV Plus to watch it. Apple TV Plus is $5 a month. The other that was announced just before the owners all of a sudden decided they had to negotiate. Secondly, Peacock, which is an NBC streaming service. Peacock has the ability to select two games every Wednesday. So Monday and Wednesday, by the way. So what they could do is they could do the same thing. They could say, oh, we want that game, we want that game, and that's the only place you could watch it on Peacock. Now, I'm not sure how this will work, but Peacock has three levels. They have a free level, one for $4.99 and one for $9.99. I don't know if they will make it that you have to, you know, buy the ones for pay or the only ones you get the game. Details to follow. But, Mike, you know, for you and I, this is a big deal. We now – the Pirates, not the Pittsburgh Pirates, are going to come and take our games, and we're going to have to pay to watch them. We never thought this would be the case, and we had our rabbit ears and our black and white TV in the kitchen, right? So, so Mike, it's a new world, man. You know, games, they're going to be basically taken from our free TV outlets, and if you don't pony up, you're not watching it. So, Mike, what do you think of that?
This is normal for somebody. It's just not normal for me. Look, like you said, time moves on. This is called progress, whether you like it or not. To me, this goes right back to the owners. I believe they miscalculated in their effort to lock out the players. They locked them out, and here they are signing revenue deals. How hypocritical was that? And, you know, this harkens back right back to the mistrust that the owners have and the unions. You know, they share against each other, all this animosity, because the owners won't open up their books. And here's a perfect example. Like I said, signing revenue deals while you're locking out players. But I, Rich, I won't be paying for those streaming services. If it's not on my regular TV deal, I'll be listening on the radio. I don't necessarily need to see it. I watch most games with one eye to begin with, because I got other games on the computer, on the radio. You know, I'm usually doing two, three, four things at the same time. So it's not going to affect me per se, but all these, you know, subscription services, they can stick it. I won't be participating, Rich.
I don't – well, I'm a sucker. I already have Apple TV Plus, so I'm paying $4.99 a month. So.
I think I already have it because of my son and my wife. Me, personally, I'm not there, man. I'm a caveman.
It's sad. You know, it's sad that if somebody, if like, I think about maybe like a little old lady somewhere in the Bronx or something, and or somewhere anywhere, and watching baseball is his or her, the little old man, whatever. And that's like their thing. You know, they've been doing it since the 40s, right? And all of a sudden, oops, you know, that Friday night, you're going to sit there by yourself because they probably don't know how to stream. Maybe they don't have a computer or they don't have internet. It just, it kind of sucks. But what's interesting about it is it came out on the 8th, March 8th, which I think was the Tuesday. And all of a sudden on Wednesday, we thought we had a deal, but it was something called part at the last minute. But the owners became very conciliatory toward the players. More money in the pool for bonus pool, really raising that competitive balance tax threshold. Amazing when that information came out about Apple TV, how much less leverage they had. Yeah. Are you kidding me? They were sitting on that, and they weren't going to miss any games. They're not walking away from a penny of this. So, Sam, you're a young man. I mean, you know, streaming is a part of what you do. What do you think of this?
Relatively. I'm catching up quickly, Rich.
But unfortunately, I keep moving. You're never going to catch me, Sam.
Okay. So, first of all, I just to get this question out of the way, Rich, how soon will the local TV stations know when they are not, on cue to work?
Fantastic question. I don't know the answer. I read about this voraciously over the weekend, and that's not noted. It's like it doesn't say you'll know a week in advance, a day in advance. It's already picked already.
You can't do this. And it's just like you can't do a day in advance. I would really anticipate you need to, like, have it set for the month. Like, you know, when it comes to the uniform changes, you need to know March of the year before what's going on. So the idea that, like, somebody is literally just going to wake up and be like, hey, you know, today, and again, this is just me railing without having the full information about it, but, like, as far as I'm concerned, you need at least a month notice to tell people, hey, you're not working today. And that's where, like, it continues to show how jaded some of the people who are thinking about this stuff are, and so separated from the working man and woman. That was my first thought. My other thought, and I'll ask you guys this, as somebody closing in on 40, but still younger than some who this affects, do you think, like, you say to yourself, it's not as easily available, you guys are trying to grow the game, create more fans, well, good job. But I wonder, and I'll ask you, Rich, first, do you think that, like, putting it on these streaming services, part of that does have something to do with making it more accessible to the way younger people are watching things now? The problem I would see is the fact that it's there's just way too much content on these platforms. And so are they really going to, pass up whatever new show, the morning show, let's say, and all these other things that, you know, Jason Momoa, standing right next to a baseball, like, are they really going to stop and say, hey, you know, what is this game about? So anyway, that's, I think I had one more thing, but I'll throw it back to you, Rich, with that. Is putting it on the streaming services like they did with YouTube actually trying to connect with the youth?
Well, you know, to answer your first question, it's a great question about how far in advance. Hopefully the schedule is already picked out. But you would think if it was, we would know. Like, you know, this Friday night, the Mets are going to be on Apple. So we don't know that yet. I hope there's ample notice. But to answer your question, yeah, I get it. You know, young people stream. And so you could say connect with them. And the other thing is that there are no blackouts. So unlike MLB TV, you know, you would think, right? So if you live in New York area, Apple TV, you'll stream it. There are no blackouts. Okay, whereas with MLB TV, it's blacked out there if it's on TV locally. So that's a couple of points. But on the other side of that, it costs money. And I know $4.99 doesn't sound like much, and it isn't. But maybe that family just doesn't want to do it. You know, maybe that family doesn't want to pay that $5. And if you have to pay for Peacock, it might be 10 a month or 15. And so if you're saying give them, you know, where I work, we say the same thing, meet the customer where the customer is. If you're saying put it on a streaming service because young people stream, there's logic to that. But on the other hand, it's not free streaming. And if you're charging
right.
for it, I wonder if you're counterbalancing the idea of meeting the customer where the customer is.
The last thing that I was going to ask you guys regarding the old man and woman who are used to watching their Friday night game, or let's say Sunday on Pix 11, do you think there's also, and here's me playing contrarian, that too many people have gotten away from listening to the radio broadcast, and there could be a silver lining here that more people are going to go back to Howie and Wayne?
I think it's going to happen regardless. Go ahead, Mike.
Sure. No, I agree with you. Radio has sustained everything. Cable, satellite, subscription TV, you name it. Radio remains and will continue to remain. But, you know, grandma, grandpa, and subscription TV and how they're used to doing it and how they're doing it now. Well, it's true. A lot of people, you know, have unplugged, you know, cut the cord, as they say, and, you know, they just get these subscriptions and that's how they live and they watch it off their phone. Times are changing. However, Sam, I think you were the ones who, you were the one who used the word grow the game and draw interest of fans and new fans and, you know, things of that nature. And I'm sorry, but I just have to cycle back to what I said in the last podcast, that this also has everything to do with the owners and the commissioner. A commissioner, in his job description, is to act on in the best interests of baseball. We used to have commissioners like that, but they put in one of their own cohorts, Mr. Selig, and Manfred is his puppet. He handed the baton, you know, so this, and I wholeheartedly feel like this commissioner is working 100% at the behest of these owners. So whatever they want, he's going to work for them, regardless of the best interest of baseball. That's where my mind really is. So in so far as growing the game, no, they're growing tumors as we speak. You know, sorry to use that word, but but that's what that's the business model I see them implementing. All the owners want this, that, and the other, and now they have a guy who's going to spearhead that attack. Whereas another commissioner prior to Selig, you know, in that whole coup d'etat and the changing of the guard and how they go about business, these guys just are no longer working in the best interest of baseball. But I also have to say that, you know, 30 years from now, people born in 2022 aren't going to be absorbing baseball the same way we did 30 years ago.
I think you're right. Sam, anything more on this? You want to move to actual New York Mets baseball news?
No, it's just I'll finish it with this. Like, he's absolutely right, and the baseball, and it can't be just that the fact that the players and the owners are arguing. They need another national moment, and I can't think of the last time they've had one, and they're trying to manufacture it with the I guess they tried to manufacture it with the Field of Dreams game. And I do hope that the Patterson game happens once the stadium, the Negro League Stadium over in Patterson, New Jersey, is renovated. But there used to be national moments with baseball where the entire country, more or less, couldn't stop talking about it. One of those times was Game 6 of the NLCS. So, 1986, excuse me. So that's what they need, and I don't know how they're going to get it.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes you have to go with your gut, and my gut tells me that charging to watch the game No. It's just a no. It's not growing the game. I understand the points about that's how young people get content, but, you know, your average 12-year-old can't afford for $5 a month. Mom and dad have to pay for it. So if mom and dad say, no, you're not, you've just made that, you've just alienated that 12-year-old, right? Maybe that DeGrom's pitching that day. You've alienated that kid. You haven't brought that kid in. You know, the NFL does it right. They do simulcast on Nickelodeon, and they have people explaining the game in fun terms to the kids. They're not charging them for it. But anyway, all right. So that's the business of baseball side. We've gone about 45 minutes on that. But we have to talk about our New York Mets and turn to the actual action, guys. We have 7-plus months, hopefully closer to 8, of Mets baseball coming up. And the Mets have made a lot of moves. They've been active. So let's jump on it. So camp opened on the guys started reporting on Friday. You know, guys trickled in Saturday. And the Mets started making moves almost immediately. So the first one that they made of note was they brought in a pitcher. They brought in Chris Bassitt of the Oakland A's. My thought is he projects, obviously, as a number three when you have DeGrom and Scherzer up top. So what do you think of that, Mike? Mets got active real quickly, and they addressed the need in starting pitching.
I like it. I like it a lot. You know, I'm not doing cartwheels over him. He's not that type of pitcher, but it seems like he's coming off career best season. He's strung together some solid work. And, you know, let's face it, the Mets need pitching depth. We seem to have a strong 1-2 punch, but who's that number three? Who's that number four? So I think he fits in exactly where we need him, in the middle of this rotation. Hopefully he stays healthy, and he continues his upward trend. He's done some good work for the Oakland A's. So, you know, I look forward to him as a Met. I'm okay with the price tag. We gave up JT Jin, which was, a highly touted prospect in our system, or the Met system, not to say that I own stock in the team. And we gave away Adam Oler. So, you know, insofar as transacting minor leaguers, I'm okay with that. There's certain ones that are untouchables, but, you know, this is Billy Upler's team now, and whatever he drafts forward, it, you know, is foremost in his mind. So, you know, JT Jin, it is what it is. You got to give to get. I'm happy with Chris Bassitt.
Very good. Sam, Chris Bassitt, first big domino to fall for the Mets. They needed a pitcher. They got one. What do you think?
I think it the move made sense. You didn't give up too many minor leaguers, too many strong. Well, you know, I need to look at the names before I actually say you didn't give up strong minor leaguers. But it's not some of the names that Met fans are clinging to right now, the Francisco Alvarezes, the Brett Beatty's, the Mark Vientos. Looking at his numbers, yes, he had a career year. It's nice to see. I always like to look at the whip, the walks and hits per inning pitch, because I think that, weirdly enough, is a stronger indication than any earned run average, especially considering how many unearned runs can happen when you produce walks and hits. And last year, he had a very, very good whip at 1.06. I mean, usually the elite, like Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer, a lot of times don't have a whip above one. They are not producing a walk combined with a hit in nine innings pitched more than once. That's great in one inning, you know? And so he was 12-4, 3.15 ERA. His strikeouts were up at 159. The next highest was 141 in 2019. And if you're looking at the 2020 odd season, he did really well within the context of 63 innings pitched with a 2.29 ERA. But his whip was a little higher, ironically, at 1.16. So I will also bring up that what we were talking about regarding interleague play is that names like this, which were kind of foreign to me, because I wasn't paying enough attention to all of baseball, are now going to be more familiar when the trades happen because we'll have seen them.
Well, there you go. You're right. I think that's another benefit. I totally agree, Sam. I'm totally aligned with this idea of playing every team every year. And And I think that is one of the benefits, like we just said. All right, so they bring in Chris Bassett, clearly number three starter, one of two Oakland All-Stars last year. We'll talk about the other one in a little bit. Okay, so Chris Bassett. Now, the Mets also need some help in the bullpen. Jerry Familia signed with the Phillies. And to bring another right in the bullpen, they went to Mike's homeland, the borough of Brooklyn, and brought in Adam Ottavino. So, Mike, we'll start with you. What do you think about your native son signing with the Mets?
Homeboy, yeah, I'm proud of him. So you can never have enough pitching. Like you said, Familia signed somewhere else. Can never have enough pitching. We need him, and we need more. So this guy's quality, you know, satisfied with the acquisition.
Amen. Sam, your thoughts?
Park Slope native, Adam Ottavino. And I know that he had an off year last year, but I think that's why you were able to get him at $4 million. And this could be a little move that ends up paying major dividends, especially, you know, let's face it, Met fans still have a lot of skepticism regarding Edwin Diaz. So that bullpen needs to be fortified, needs to be solidified. I'm looking now at how off his season was. And then, you know, it's not like it still had a 4.21 ERA. These things can fluctuate when it comes to relievers. And I'm seeing also he is from my birth year of 1985. And we're now at the point where I recognize that I am older than some of these players. I knew that day was going to come where I'd look and see that they're, you know, forget about the 20-year-olds. Just seeing the fact that he was born 11/22/1985 on February 9th, 1985. Anyway, so, yeah, you know, I want to pick his brain about Brooklyn. And that's a whole nother podcast, literally.
Well, and by the way, if you get a chance, back to Chris Bassett for 1 second. He looks like David Wright facially. If you see a picture of him without a hat on, he resembles David Wright. A lot of people are saying it, and it's totally there. So if you happen to be online, take a look at that. All right, so we talked about Ottavino. We talked about Chris Bassett. Let's talk about what the Mets don't have. And what they don't have at the moment is, well, at least not to my satisfaction, they don't have, is a quality lefty in the bullpen. Now, they have David Peterson, who could go in the pen. They signed Alex Claudio, a former Brewer, to, I believe it's a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. And he is tough on lefties. I remember him pitching against the Mets. And he's one of those herky-jerky left-handers who left-handers can't touch. But I'm not sure about that. You know, not sure if that's enough. David Peterson, maybe in the bullpen. Alex Claudio, maybe. So the guy with the killer mustache, Andrew Chafin, is still out there, a former Cub, and he's a lefty, and I think he'd be an ideal fit for the Mets. And rumor is, of course, the same rumor has been going on for 3 years, that the Mets might try to swing a trade for Josh Hader from the Brewers. Mets have a lot of extra parts, guys like McNeil, Smith, Davis. So, Mike, let me ask you this. I think we're all going to agree that they need help on the left side in the bullpen. What are your thoughts on how to fill that?
Without a doubt, they better do something. I don't want to go into the season without southpaws in the bullpen. David Peterson is interesting because, you know, Tawan Walker, are we going to get the first half Tawan Walker or the second half Tawan Walker? And Carlos Carrasco, is he trustworthy? Is he at the end of his career? Does he have more? You know, will he be healthy? So, you know, David Peterson, you know, his mission statement is still unclear. Hopefully we have the depth in the starting rotation so Peterson can start in the bullpen, but we definitely need to add more. And you know what they say, any left-hander with a heartbeat has value.
Amen, especially in this division. You got Bryce Harper, you know, you've got a lot of key left-handed hitters. And so, Sam, what do you think? The Mets have enough with Claudio and Peterson and whatever else they could scrape up, or do you think they need to be a little more aggressive?
I mean, that's a key factor here is people in our division for, you know, after, you know, at this point, 10 years now that the Mets have faced, I was about to say Chris Bryant, but Bryce Harper, excuse me. And it's a, I think there's just not enough emphasis on, I mean, you know, this is also me being partial as a Southpaw myself, but there's not enough emphasis on, you know, different looks anymore, especially considering the whole three batter rule, which is a whole another tangent we could go on since we were already railing about rule changes. So, yeah, I think it's majorly important. And just even going back to, you know, rest in peace, the late Pedro Feliciano, major factor. Jerry Blevins, major factor, and probably a big reason why the 2015 Mets weren't able to sustain the early success and had to have a lot of great things go for them before they caught fire. So yeah, Southpaw all the way. Long live Southpaws.
No, they definitely need it. That's one of the areas on this team that I think is a gap right now. They're a good team. They're not a great team, in my opinion. They're a very good team, but this is one of the gaps. So this will get them, as that title of that book, Good to Great. For them to get from good to great, this is a huge step in the direction. They need a lockdown lefty. If they could bring Hader in, Chafin would be very good. Hader would be outstanding to bring in. One of those two guys would be fantastic. Then you supplement with Claudio and Peterson as necessary. That's my recipe anyway. All right, guys, a couple more Mets things before we talk a little more general baseball. Today, Jacob DeGrom said he is opting out. No question, he's opting out. He was asked a question directly, and he said, no, I'm opting out at the end of this year. Now, that may not be as draconian as it sounds. You know, he said he wants to stay with the Mets since his career. Steve Cohen can pay him whatever he needs. So what do you think of that, Mike? DeGrom, very upfront, I'm opting out. Don't even talk about it. That's what's happening. What do you think about that?
It's his right. And the union has negotiated a long time, many years, many decades for that right. It's business. It's baseball. So he just wants to get back on the free market and, you know, just up his ante a little bit. I think he wants to stay. He just wants to make a financial correction here.
I think you're right. Sam, what do you think?
Financial correction, indeed. You know, he had Brody Von Wagenen negotiate that one for him on the other side of where he initially was to begin the offseason, that particular offseason. And, of course, he was negotiating with the Wilpons. And it's interesting when you see somebody like Jacob DeGrom have more honor, of course, than the people at the top, and which makes perfect sense. But right now, I think that, you know, it's not necessarily a Noah Syndergaard situation where he's saying that he wants to be a Met for life, and then at the sign of trouble, he, you know, bounces on the $21 million. I think that he really does think that it would be cool to be a Met for life. David Wright made that choice. I think Jacob DeGrom was very influenced by David Wright and his leadership. We don't even talk about that enough, how important David Wright must have been, just from what I can pick up on, to the cultivating of Jacob DeGrom, even though we're talking about a position player. Thank God for David Wright. It doesn't get said enough. And this is coming from somebody who gave him a lot of crap at the beginning. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense, but I have confidence that they'll try to figure something out and we'll get something done.
I agree. And I think it works on both sides because, God forbid, he has, you know, arm issues again. Not only will he not get the big money, but maybe the Mets shouldn't be thinking about giving him big money. So I think if I were Steve Cohen, I'd play it this exactly how he's playing it, which is, look, we love you, man, but let's see you be healthy all year. If you are, we'd like to retain your services. We'll talk. And DeGrom even said he intends to keep lines of communication with Steve Cohen open after the season, so he doesn't want to talk about it during the season. So if he shows you he's healthy, make him a Met for life. And I don't think there's any question he will be a Met for life if he's healthy. But that's a big if right now. We have to watch that. And so I think it's something that it sounds awful. He's acting out. Oh, my God, he might leave. But it's the right thing to do for him so he can get the market correction, as Mike so aptly put it. And for the Mets, they have to take the wait and see. All right, one more thing on this, on the Mets that I want to touch on before touching on a couple other things. So remember Joan Rivers, can we talk? So let's talk. Let me tell you about something that's bothering me. I want to see if it bothers you guys. Mets have a lot of age on this team. Scherzer, 37. DeGrom, 33. Carrasco, 35. Bassett, 32. I think he actually might be 33. And then you look at Starling Marte, I believe, is 34. Kane, I think, is 32. Escobar is over 30. You know, you get what I'm saying. Alonso and Lindor are under 30, but this is getting to be an older team. And you know what happens when you have older teams. I think of the 2009 team that broke down like a rickety old bus. Does that bother you at all, or am I crazy, Mike?
No. You're correct to think that way. That's what happens. You know, the exception, I guess, would be the Weeze kids from Philadelphia. Remember them? They put together a nice aged team. But I'm okay with that, Rich, and I'll tell you why. I think there's two plans in place. And the first and foremost is this short-term three-year plan. Put together a roster, try to win as much as you can with Buck Showalter. And like I said months ago, that Mr. Cohen's money has to prop up this team until they rebuild the farm system. 3 years from now, heading into that fourth year, I want this team to be unrecognizable. By that time, I want to be able to graduate minor leaguers en masse, and that will be our new core. And then you supplement it accordingly, transactions, free agents, and, you know, much to the other owner's pleasure, our salary, you know, will come down as a result. But this short-term three-year plan, go for it. Do whatever, you know, bring in veterans, mix them in with younger players. Do whatever you can to negotiate these next 3 years. You know, I don't expect Buck Showalter extending beyond these 3 years. I want a new manager by then. Like I said, I'll say it again. This team better be unrecognizable. And what are we in, 2022? By 2023, 4, 5, by 2026, this team better be unrecognizable to me. Billy Epler should have redrafted, restocked, and promoted, like I say, en masse, and then you supplement accordingly. So what they do over these next 3 years, I'm cool. Mr. Cohen wants to win. He's spending money. This is a short-term plan, and I'm cool with it.
You know, I think the players that they picked up would indicate that that they are clearly in win-now mode, right? We have guys over 30, stars, you know, guys with star power. So good points you made there, Mike. And it's a short-term plan. You take who's available. You do it with money while you restock the farm. Of course, the recent trade for Bassett is a bit of a fly in that ointment, but sometimes you can't just buy everybody on the free agent market. They needed a pitcher. Bassett, the A's are clearly rebuilding. So he was available, and it did cost the Mets their top pitching prospect, from what I understand. I think he was rated number one in terms of pitching prospects. So, Sam, interesting, we were talking about age a few minutes ago. All these guys that I'm calling older, younger than you, they're way younger than me. So what do you think about the age on the team?
It's funny. I didn't even think about the fact that I'm the same age now as Max Scherzer, although maybe he's like 1 year older than me. But even with Bassett, you know, you're talking about somebody who's 33 years of age, just hitting his stride, more or less. And, you know, I started thinking about who could be the exception to Mike's rule about 2026, and the only person that I could truly think of is Pete Alonso. And just to side note, thank God he's still here with us after that horrible car crash. Yeah, you know, it's age gets the best of us. If death doesn't before that. So we're in win now mode. I'm not necessarily concerned. This is obviously something that has dogged the Mets in the past, but At the same time, the vibes are different. The vibes are changing. And I, you know, like, of course you're going to have this weird amalgamation of everything that has ever been wrong in the first year of Steve Cohen, just trying to iron out the kinks one way or another regarding 2021. But now he's settling in. Now we're settling in. And, you know, you see the littlest of things, the littlest of details, that this is a better run operation. And maybe we're grading on a curve considering who came before us, but all indications are that we shouldn't necessarily be concerned that it's going to be the same thing over and over again. And that also goes with aging veterans.
Fair enough. Well said. All right. So you are listening to the Messian podcast, and we're entering the ninth inning of our show. It's just a couple more little pieces of business to take care of. So one thing, gentlemen, I know we've talked about the business of baseball, great discussion on that, talked about the Mets and what they've done since the lockout was lifted. Let's go a little more general baseball, and we have to start with our friends, the Atlanta Braves. They have made a decision clearly to move on from Freddie Freeman by bringing in the A's other all-star from 2021, Matt Olson, first baseman, left-handed hitting first baseman, very, very good player. So my question to you, first of all, I actually hate to say this. I thought I'd say these words in one sentence. I give the Braves credit for that because Freeman's going to be 33 before the season is over. And a guy of his stature is going to command a contract, especially a contract you're going to say 5 to 7 years. You're paying this guy to be 38 to 40. And you know what happens when you sign those contracts. You're paying for the first couple of years of it and hoping you could somehow salvage the last couple. So if the Braves are saying, you know what, we love the guy. The guy's great. I'm not giving this guy a 7-year contract and paying him when he's 40. I'm just not doing it. And so we're going to bring in Matt Olson, who's a younger guy. I know what? I tip my cap to them for that. But that having been said, Freeman, Met killer, big part of the Braves World Series team, gone essentially. Maybe Dodgers, probably most likely Dodgers. How does that impact the National League East, Mike? Do you think the Mets, and you could say Phillies or anybody else, but do you think the Mets become the favorites? Is it that much of a cataclysmic move? Mike, you might be muted.
Sorry about that. No, I still think it's going to be a dogfight. I don't think it automatically makes us the favorite. You know, we'll have three teams battling out for first place again, Mets, Phillies, Atlanta. Let's see what the Marlins are up to. Let's see what Washington will be up to. But no, by no stretch do I think anything will be easy. Freddie Freeman, like you say, good move on their part. His age doesn't warrant, you know, one of those long-term deals. It's going to be interesting where he shows up. Does he fit here? We've always wanted Alonso at first and Dom Smith at DH. Are we going to change that conversation? No. In order to bring him here, I can only see it one way. You give him more money for, you know, shorter length. If he wants to come here for 3 years, that's great. But this is where practicality, you know, flies out the window. He's going to want a lot of money for a lot of years. Somebody will give it to him. But, you know, business-wise, I don't think he fits here. And I don't think it necessarily upsets the balance of the National League East.
Fair enough. Sam, does Freeman's departure affect the balance? What do you think?
Now, I'm not sure exactly whether it's just hot air and, you know, this is what always happens after moments like this where the Braves seem to be the one who decided to move on. Indications are that they've been lowballing him. It's kind of exactly plays into what you are talking about. And like, there's, you know, stuff from Freddie Freeman's side about the idea, I think, that they were never even given there was no indication that the Braves were moving to this type of of situation. I think specifically with the Braves and how it affects the division, you know, they did just trade for a young first baseman coming off of a pretty solid season with Oakland. We shouldn't, you know, balk at that. It's probably still going to be a dogfight, and he's, you know, he's being inserted into a defending world champion, even if Freddie Freeman was a giant part of that. So it does seem like he's going to go to the Dodgers most likely, but it's the only thing we're basically hearing right now. Meanwhile, you do have a trend on the Mets side of things with no rumors getting leaked and nothing necessarily, generally speaking, until the last second, the Lindor situation. Maybe only there was a lot being drummed up about the Max Scherzer stuff. But where I'm going with this is the idea that maybe Freddie Freeman feels a little slighted and does what Daniel Murphy does reversely, and goes to a division rival to stick it. I mean, he's at the point, too, that he's done everything he possibly could with the Braves franchise. And it's also strange considering he was arguably the next Chipper Jones. So it's weird to think that he's not going to be a Brave for his entire life. But we're in a different world now. And so looping back, I wonder whether, you know, Mike says that he's not necessarily a fit. I think the flexibility of Dom Smith and the fact that he is easily the most valuable piece of the three that get talked about as being pieces that could be traded. No, not trying to offend the Jeff McNeil stands out there, but I think because of his versatility, durability, and the way I know that he's had some moments in left where he gets exposed, but I think the routes he generally takes are outstanding. I think he's adjusted well to left field, which also plays into Pete Alonso at the DH, Freddie Freeman at first, or vice versa, and Dom Smith cycling out. You can literally have Dom Smith in the lineup every day in this scenario, one way or another, because of that DH. We shouldn't automatically think that this couldn't work for the Mets and Freddie Freeman combined. I don't know where he's from. I don't know what he could be leaning towards in terms of overall family situation with where he goes. But that's some of the, you know, I brought him up on the last podcast, and I don't think I've been shy about how remarkable, you know, it's already surreal that Max Scherzer is on this team. You know, tickle me pink if Freddie Freeman's also, and we talk about, you know, I said it earlier that the hitters are just generally not as honed in on the fundamentals of the game, of the hitting game, like they used to be, hit it up the middle, like Danielle McCarron said. Freddie Freeman, like I said on the last podcast, is one of the most versatile hitters I've ever seen, and is just his approach, every at-bat, he doesn't look cheated. He never looks cheated. He's a big reason why they won the World Series, and I think it would be a major move on the Mets' part to get in on this.
I've almost given up on that. You never know. The Mets have been stealth before. You mentioned Lindor, good point. Scherzer, you know, you heard about it a day or two before it happened. But I've given up on thinking of Freeman coming here, but it would open up a lot of possibilities. Obviously, you'd have to make a bunch of trades. You wouldn't need Dom and Pete. You got rid of at least one of them. And it would be interesting. Nothing, you know, you can't rule anything out. People say that it's going to be LA because he's from Orange County, California, and the Dodgers, you know, kind of need a first baseman at this point. They're probably going to use Bellinger in the outfield, and Pujols looks like he's going to sign with the Cardinals. So, but we'll see. Anything could happen. So, gentlemen, we have reached the end of our agenda of items to discuss. It has been a great night talking baseball with you, both from a business perspective and a Mets perspective. So, guys, I'll leave it with this as we go to our last word for tonight. The New York Mets will be on TV. I believe they're on Saturday night if you have MLB.tv, but they'll be on SNY on Sunday. So just we're about 6 days away from Mets baseball, and we thought we, you know, it was possible. Some people thought we would not have a season. So fantastic, right? So with that said, guys, it is time for our last word. So, Mike, first of all, thank you for joining us tonight, talking baseball with us. And what's your last word tonight?
Love talking baseball with you guys. Thank you. Thank you, baseball. Thank you, owners. Thank you, the union, for hammering this out. And thank you. We have a season, and it's going to be a full season. So here we are, baseball. Play ball. That's it. Thank you, and play ball. Happy.
All right. We'll swing it over to the Grand Poobah of podcasting operations. So Symmetry, we started the show with that. We'll end the show with that. And Sam, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure talking baseball with you as well. Sir, what is your last word tonight?
Relieved. I could have done with just the Cyclones, but I'm so happy, just like Mike and I are talking about, on the Jackie Robinson Day, the 15th, there's a possibility that we will be having a doubleheader going to opening day to see the Tom Seaver statue unveiled and hopefully see the Mets beat the Diamondbacks before heading down to Coney Island to see the Dodgers play for the first time ever on opening day, for the first time since April of 1957 on April 15th. So relieved one way or another.
I can't say it any better myself, guys. It feels wonderful to know that we're at the very beginning. Baseball at least until early November. So it's wonderful. You know, 5 years, you don't have to worry about this crap again. Hopefully you won't have to worry about it then. But let's just enjoy where we are, that we're on the beginning of another wonderful baseball season. The Mets certainly look primed to contend, which adds to it. And I thank you guys. I certainly thank the listeners as well, whether you're listening live or whether you're streaming this after. We can't do it without you, so thank you for being part of the Metsian podcast. And so, Sam, I know it's a little bit of a weird feeling, right, with the lockout and all, but end this show the way you feel appropriate. So, Sam, take us out.
Meet the Mets. Greet the Mets. Oh, Jesus, I already butchered it, didn't I? Meet the Mets.
Step
meet the right Mets.
Up and,
right
greet,
up
the
and
Mets.
Greet the Mets. Bring your kitties, whoever you're married to. Guaranteed to have the time of your life because the Mets are really sucking the ball, knocking those home runs over the wall. East side, west side, everybody's coming down to meet the Mets Mets of New York Town, of New York Town. Yes.
And the butcher and the baker. And they love the
Mets.
I love that part.
I love that part, too. No, all I can say, Sam, about that is beautiful. I'm not kidding. It literally was beautiful. I loved hearing that. It's exuberant. It's all about the Mets, where we should be on this podcast as we sit on the precipice of a season. So, guys, have a great night. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, everyone. And we have baseball, and let's go Mets. Good night, everybody.
Good night, all.
Let's go Mets. Good night, all.